Well, this is the last time we're going to be looking at any wisdom literature, and we're looking at a very particularly interesting form of wisdom literature when we look at the book of Ecclesiastes. We've been considering the way of wisdom since summer. I don't know if you recall that, but since summer we began looking at themes from the Proverbs for one purpose. I want you to be Obi-Wan Kenobis. I want you to be Gandalfs. I hope you want to be wise sages, people who live wisely, who live well, who consider their lives and seek to do the good, the right, the wise, and proper thing, to live wisely in God's created order. And in order to do that, you have to know what's best. You have to think about the choices that you make and attempt to try to make the right choices in every situation. And that's where the rub comes in, because it's not always easy to know what the wise choice is. Wisdom's not that predictable. I don't expect you to remember it, but 2 weeks ago we looked at the paradox of planning. We considered planning as a theme from the Proverbs. And do you recall, we suggested that the paradox is, as good stewards of our time, we should plan wisely and well. But as people who know that things are beyond our control and there are things we don't know, we should also be ready that plans often don't come to fruition like we planned. That our plans often fail, and in light of that, we have to learn how to be flexible and to trust God even when our plans fall short. That's one of the challenges of the Proverbs. The Proverbs are an interesting form of literature. They're not promises. They're not promises like, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. They are instead wise sayings, which are true sometimes, but they're not always true. Proverbs 15:1 is a good example of this. This is a wisdom saying from Proverbs: a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. That's generally true. If you're dealing with someone who's very irate and angry, a soft answer might turn away their wrath, but it doesn't always turn away their wrath. They might get even more angry. This is particularly true with one of those proverbs that people often assume is a promise, but it's not. It's just a proverb. It's doing the best you can in the situation you're given. Train up a child in the way he should go, and in the end he will not depart from it. Well, it's wise to train up the child in faith and in wisdom, but you have no control over where they go. You can't control their lives. You can't predict how they might end up. The best you can do with what you know is to train them wisely and well, but their destiny is outside of your control. You do not know whether that will have the impact that you want it to have. Part of wisdom is recognizing that there are things that we just don't know, and oftentimes we just have to choose to do the wise and right thing, even if there's no immediate payoff. Sometimes we have to act when we simply don't know. And that's what Ecclesiastes is all about. Ecclesiastes is another book of wisdom, but it's different than Proverbs, because Proverbs has this very simple way of looking at life. If you live wisely, you will be rewarded. If you live foolishly, you will suffer. But the writer of Ecclesiastes, who's purported to be Solomon, the epitome of wisdom in Israel's culture, actually wants to say in Ecclesiastes, you know, you really don't know. Because sometimes you live wisely and you suffer for it. Sometimes you act foolishly and fortune favors the foolish. Good people sometimes suffer. Bad actions sometimes lead to profit. And so Solomon, in his book, actually wants to suggest in Ecclesiastes, to be wise, we must recognize there are things beyond our grasp, things we do not know, circumstances beyond our control. And of course, you can see it clearly in our text before us. There are four phrases that are four times this phrase is repeated. Look at verse 2. Divide your means seven ways or even eight. Ready? For you do not know. Nobody likes to act on that. Do this because you don't know. Or then verse 6. Just as you don't know how God puts together and fashions human beings, so you do not know the work of God. Well, hold on. I want to know the work of God. No, you don't. It's beyond fathoming. Or verse 6, in the morning sow your seed, at evening let your hands be idle. Do something. Why should we do something? For you do not know. We don't like that. We don't like doing something because we don't know. We want to know there's a guaranteed outcome. We want to be convinced that if we do this, then this will happen. But that's not how life works. Life is not that simple and clean. So what do we do? And what we do is what we find the author of Ecclesiastes is inviting us to do. When we don't know, we must act nonetheless. Because if we let our ignorance of something lead us to inaction, then we'll never know. We'll never do anything. If we're waiting for absolute certainty to be guaranteed of a certain outcome to do something, our response will be inaction rather than action. We won't do a darn thing. And that's what this text is about. If you look at this text with me, the author is speaking about one particular theme, but you could apply this to a lot of themes. He's talking about sending out your bread. And that's not a phrase we often use, but to cast your bread is a way to speak of charity. That you have enough daily bread, and so you are giving to others. You are casting out your bread. And so this whole passage is about the Hebrew virtue of charity. That you are giving generously. You could apply this to any kind of action, but we'll stick with charity or generosity here in order to go through the text as it stands. And so what our author says is, verse 1, cast out your bread or send your bread upon the waters. Why? After many days, you'll get it back, which is just another way to say, send out your bread, good will come eventually. I mean, maybe not immediately, after many days. It might be a long wait. You might not be benefited and benefit from this investment right away. It could take months, years even. Eventually, you'll be rewarded for it, but understand, you're taking a chance. Because who knows where the waters might take it? Who knows where this might go? The return will probably not be immediate. And so already you see kind of the direction he's taking us in. We're not sure of a return on our investment, and yet we're still to act. We're to cast our breads. It may be a while, but eventually some good will come of it. And then he moves on, still speaking about sending out your bread. Verse 2, divide your means 7 ways or 8, which is a way to say, you know, spread out the love. Be really generous. Give generously, provide charity, seek to serve others, divide your means in many ways. Why? Verse 2b, for you do not know what disaster might happen on earth. You don't know how things will turn out. We're all dealing with the California fires and understanding the challenges and the crisis going on there. None of those people expected to have lost everything. It wasn't on their calendar to say, you know, this is how things are going to turn out. For us individually, we have it in this congregation, sudden illness hits or disease or horrible crisis situations occur in people's life that no one predicted and no one planned. And so the author says you need to cast out your bread because you really don't know. I mean, the next day could be wonderful. It could be just rewarding. It could be the best day you've ever had. Or it could be the worst day you ever had. We saw that with James. You know, James speaks about planning. He says, you don't know. Your life's but a mist. It's but a vapor. You have no idea what's going to hit you tomorrow. And so instead of letting that lead you to inaction, saying, you know, I don't know, so I'm paralyzed by the fact I don't know, he says, cast your bread. Cast your bread generously. Spread out the love. Then he goes one step further. And the next two verses to me are the most interesting. Because they're hard for us to get. But once you get it, you'll never not get it. Verse 3. When clouds are full, they empty rain on the earth. A tree falls. In the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. Well, how do the clouds that are full cast out their rain? How does the tree fall? It's because of the wind. And so he then says in verse 4, whoever observes the wind will not sow. And whoever's watching the clouds to burst out in rain will not reap. And the idea is there are things beyond your control. You can't control the weather. You can't control the environment. Weather and falling trees are beyond our control. And so if you focus on the inevitable, on the clouds and the rain and the wind, you'll never do a doggone thing. Because you'll say to yourself, I can't be generous. Something bad might happen. The clouds might burst out. The wind might cause things to topple in my life. So I can't be generous because who knows what may happen? Who knows what disaster lies ahead? And what Solomon wants us to see is with that mindset, you'll never be generous. Because there's always that possibility lurking. There's always things beyond your control. There's always winds that you can't foresee. There's always cloudbursts that are going to come down that you cannot in any way predict. And so if you're always looking for some possible disaster on the horizon, then you'll never give. You'll never be generous. You keep it all to yourself just in case the worst happens. Then he moves further and says, send out your bread. Because there is another agent involved in this world. There is a God who's involved in the inner machinations of this cosmos. And so in verse 5 he says, just as you don't know the mystery of coming into being, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Now, we don't like hearing that. We're ignorant of the work of God. But that's true for you. That's true for me. Seminary didn't help me have a leg up on you, as if somehow I know the inner workings of how the divine works and all of the machinations of God's plan. Instead, the awareness is all of us, and in fact, those who embrace wisdom the most, are willing to admit we don't know. And because we don't know, the one thing we can be certain of is God is at work. Not sure how, and I'm not sure in what way, but if I give, then I am aware that God can and will do something with it. It'll be beyond my comprehension, beyond what I can fathom, but just as the prophet Isaiah says on behalf of God, my ways are not your ways, my thoughts are higher than your thoughts, it's always going to be beyond our putting in some kind of 5-year plan or trying to predict what God might do. So if we're waiting to understand everything before we act, we'll never act. We're to do something. Finally here, you have verse 6, and this is a wonderful way to round it out. You never know what might succeed. Verse 6, in the morning sow your seed. And morning here is a metaphor for the early days of life. You young people at the very start of your pilgrimage with Christ, do it now. Give now. Be generous now. Serve now. Do the right thing now because you're sowing it in the morning. But also if you are more of a senior here today, at evening, do not let your hands be idle. So all your life long, do this. Why? For you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Something may pay off in your youth and bear fruit in later years. It may be that you wait all life long until you're a senior and you keep at it. You do the right thing. You do the wise thing. You do God's kind of thing. And eventually, the author, who's very cynical, is willing to say it will pay off. There may be some good that will come. It's just hard to predict and hard to know when and how this will occur. So when you put all this passage together, you realize our author's saying, hey, I need you to do something. I need you in wisdom to recognize your ignorance. To recognize, and that in wisdom is called learned ignorance, that you're aware that you don't know everything. And in embracing that, in humility, take a risk. Take a bold, courageous risk to at least do something. Instead of letting the ignorance cause us to be paralyzed by our inability to predict or to know, Solomon instead says, give, serve, do the right thing, do God's kind of thing, cast your bread out upon the waters generously. You just never know, but God's involved. Some good may come out of it. It may take a while, but you can't know. So don't wait until you know, or you'll never do anything. That then leads us to our rich fool parable, which many of you are familiar with. And what's interesting about the rich fool is he is the one who's paralyzed by his analysis. Because the rich fool's not a bad guy. I hope you note that. He's not a monster. He is someone who is very conservative. He is not wasteful with his possessions. He's quite frugal. He's acquired his wealth fairly, not through oppression or deceit or foul play. He's not careless. He plans. He's smart. He's savvy. He's not unjust. So what's his problem? His problem is he's embraced part of the message of Ecclesiastes. Look at verse 19. He says, you know, I got all this stuff, and I got so much of my own stuff, I need to build more stuff in order to hold all the stuff I got. And once I've done that, then, verse 19, I'll say to my soul, soul, I have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. That's part of the message of Ecclesiastes. Celebrate life, enjoy the day, seize the day. But the part he doesn't get from Ecclesiastes is, remember your Creator. Be generous. Understand that you don't know what tomorrow might bring. And in light of that, cast your bread upon the waters. Instead, he keeps it all to himself. It's my soul, my house, my crops, my barns, my grains, my goods. I will show no generosity. I'll keep it all to myself. And here's God's evaluation in verse 20. But God said to him, and you just can't be any more candid than this, you fool. You fool. You think that you've got it all planned out. You think that you're in control because of your possessions. You think that you're going to be able to predict the outcome and guarantee there's a return on your investment. Instead, this is what's happening. This very night, your life's demanded of you, and the things you've prepared, whose will they be? He does not recognize that there's so much he does not know. And in light of that, he's paralyzed by his analysis and keeps it all to himself instead of embracing the wisdom that we find here in this book of Ecclesiastes. It's amazing to me that part of wisdom is embracing there's so much we don't know. And yet, if I were to preach this or to present this in a modern day, you know, a business meeting where people are thinking about how to work their businesses or to think through their lives, or in a life coach setting, you know the phrase I'd use, instead of going through all that we've gone through in Ecclesiastes, we talk about what you've heard before, the paralysis of analysis. That if you want to, you can overthink a situation and examine all the possibilities and think through all that could happen to the point where you become paralyzed and unable to act at all because you're afraid of making a mistake. You freeze up. You're paralyzed by the analysis. If you want an example, it's a very simple example. In this picture, you have a person who knows that someone in their life needs some amount of care or attention. And so the person flowers. That might not be the perfect thing. Should I call? No. Bring food. I can't cook. Is email weird? Well, maybe I'll just do nothing. And that's the paralysis of analysis. That is thinking it over so much so that the perfect is the enemy of the good. That's why I hate phrases like, look for God's perfect will. You'll never find that. Perfect? Come on. Wisdom understands you don't know. Do the wise thing. Do the right thing. Do the Christ-like thing. You don't know what the outcome might be. Think about it. Christ always lived wisely, always lived well, and ended up on a cross. That's how things sometimes work. And yet, there was much fruit born after many days of his casting his life upon the waters for the world. We just never know. And that fear of failure needs to be countered by the courage of risk. I have one quote here I want to show you. Leo Buscaglia. Have any of you ever heard of him? Leo Buscaglia. Some of my older congregants, sorry to call you older, but it is true. He's writing in the 60s. Leo was kind of a hippie guy. He loved to write about love, and many people write him off because he was hippie-ish. But, you know, anyone who's for love is for Jesus. We're behind him. And so he writes this, and these words are definitely true. He says, to try is to risk failure, but risk must be taken because the greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing. The person who risks nothing, does nothing, has nothing, and is nothing, one may avoid suffering and sorrow, but one simply can't learn, feel, change, grow, love, live. Chained by one's certitudes, one is a slave. That person has forfeited life. Only a person who risks is free. Leo understands that we are in many ways and at many times acting beyond what we know. We never know. And yet, the options before us in not knowing are to do nothing, which is guaranteed to be a failure, or to do something which may result in some good. That's what our Ecclesiastes writer is addressing. We have no clue what good might come of our giving. We're to give generously. We are to serve lavishly. But there certainly will be no good if we do nothing. And if God's involved in the equation, the good that might come true could be beyond our fathoming. For God is able to do exceedingly abundantly beyond all that we ask or think or imagine, Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 3. So I leave you with this question: how have you cast your bread upon the waters? We like certainty. Sometimes, maybe most of the time, we have to act when we don't know. And in doing that, we're acting in trust and hope. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, lean not unto thine own understanding, because you don't know. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. We don't want to make the mistake of the rich fool whose philosophy could be summarized in this: get all you can all you get, then sit on the can. No help to anyone. It's all about him. And God says, you fool. I invite you to aspire more to John Wesley's philosophy. Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as you ever can. Why? Because you're guaranteed an investment? Why? Because it's all going to profit? No, you never know. So, do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as you ever can. You never know, so choose generosity. Take a risk, cast your bread upon the waters. And when you look at that philosophy, you realize that sounds and looks a lot like Jesus' life. Read the Gospels. He's always doing this, with no guarantee that his investment is going to lead to profit. And many times it leads to further suffering on his behalf. And yet the message he left with us is it's always better to give than receive. We can't wait until things are ideal to act, or we would never act. If we wait for certainty, we might find that in the end we're just wishing our life away. I want to invite you to pray a prayer with me. If you turn the sheet over, I'll follow this up with some personal prayers for people in our congregation. But this is a prayer that we prayed of confession in our first service, but I think it has more meaning after you've heard the passage from Ecclesiastes. So it's a prayer of confession. We'll follow it up with prayers of the people, and then Louise, be ready with our Lord's Prayer to close it out. So I invite you to pray this with me. Gracious God, abounding in gifts, you have entrusted much to us. You have given us the good news of the kingdom of Christ. You have put us together in a church to worship, learn, and serve together. You have made us your hands, feet, eyes, ears, and mouth in this world. We have been given much. Forgive us for forsaking your trust. Forgive us for refusing to use the gifts you have given us. We are afraid of commitment. It asks so much of us. We are afraid of risk. We prefer predictability, comfort, and ease. We are afraid of failure, so we fail to invest our gifts for the good of others. We act as if your gifts are given for our own benefit and not for your glory and the good of others. We commit ourselves anew to your kingdom. Grant us courage to risk for your sake. Set us free from the fear that binds us.